Artorama Podcast.
Hi Jordanis, hi Pier Giorgio. Thank you very much for your time in doing this Artorama podcast.
Thank you, Tiago.
Thank you, Tiago.
Nice. So let's start. You told me that you start collecting at the end of 2005, beginning of 2006, the time you moved together in Paris, and you, Pier Giorgio, had the example of your father in your family who collected, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were more focused on modern art maybe, and you, Jordanis, were more focused on contemporary arts in the contemporary realm. And then it started somehow when you moved together, and at this moment you just mixed these tastes and start building up the collection. So tell me more about it. How was it?
Yeah, indeed, it started when both Pier Giorgio and I moved to Paris. And Pier Giorgio's father used to collect some works, mostly from local artists from Italy, mostly paintings. On my side, I was living in the US before moving to Paris, and I would, you know, go around New York in the galleries and saw a little bit contemporary art, but I had never thought about collecting as a possibility. And then when we moved together to Paris, I think, you know, the different experiences and the different places that we're coming from, you know, when we put them together, we realized that we wanted to start be more involved with art. On our side, I think maybe it's not so much about mixing the tastes, but we kind of started as a common project, as a common journey. And in the beginning, it wasn't a very clear decision to become collectors, right? So we just wanted to be more involved with art. We looked at the different galleries, and our initial goal was just to buy some artwork, right? And little by little, this whole journey became much more serious. And on one hand, it generated great relations between us and the artist and the other people from the art world, the galleries, the curators. And at the same time, it also created many more responsibilities because from the moment that one tells you that you are a collector, then you have to actually take up this role and also question this role and also start understanding what are the responsibilities of a collector with respect to the art and to the artists.
Really nice. And coming from that question, I was wondering, I remember our last conversation that you mentioned that your first artist was Brazilian, the Tanico in Laim, you know, Angela de Tanico and Rafael Laim. And you just mentioned, and you mentioned in previous conversation that we had, that you spent time looking online at galleries and then you did your first purchase sometime after this research. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about how was this research, what did you learn from that moment from now, and maybe what would you tell your past selves as advice?
Thank you. That's a very interesting question. So we spent actually months together researching where we moved here in Paris. You know, we didn't know much of the Paris scene, so we really thought it was very important to just really delve into what existed in Paris, the art scene, the galleries, and the arts. And it took us quite a few months, and we understood through that it's very important before you purchase a work to understand the context of the work, to understand really what the realm of research, the field of activity of the artist. And that piece of that time spent doing that was fundamental. That was clearly a big lesson learned for ourselves. So if we had to go back and you know, give advice to our former selves, that would probably be a good, yeah, well done, and continue to do that, because it's really important. But we also were attracted to a very specific type of art. We at the beginning we were really focusing on art which was very conceptual and minimal in its forms, and somehow we've realized that feeling attracted to a work, so following your own taste, is a great point of entry, and you should listen to that. But At the same time, more work is needed, right? A lot more research is needed before starting really to work and collect a specific artist. Being aware of your own bias, you know, sometimes taste can hide bias, and so feeling attracted to a piece shouldn't just be the end of the journey, but perhaps the beginning or one data point, but not the entire set. And also for us, as you said, we like to create connections with artists, and therefore researching their work is fundamental, because, you know, buying a one-off piece of art, it's fine, but it doesn't really help you create the long-term connection. And only through really spending time trying to understand the context and having ourselves being challenged that we really sort of believe it's our way, at least, of coming to an acquisition. So that's really what we would suggest to ourselves back. Keep researching. Don't just listen to your taste. You know, be aware of your own biases and let yourself be challenged.
Nice. And you mentioned to me that geography, cartography, and language were two ideas that surrounded your acquisitions, right? Or maybe better, system of representation. I think you mentioned that this is a better term to refer to the topics that revolves your collection. No? And how did, I was wondering, you know, if you could tell us a little bit how did you come up with this idea? And why is it relevant to both of you?
Yeah, so I guess systems of representation is something which is quite central in our collection. We mentioned the first work that we bought that was actually a map of the world that was treated as a text and justified in different ways. So already the notions of cartography and of language were present from the very beginning, and they continue to play a very important role. And I think for us, the main idea is that what we like about art and where we find the power of art is exactly that it allows us to see the world in different ways, right? So it allows us to sometimes look at things that were not obvious, or take things that everyone would think that they are natural and obvious and kind of blur them, right? So I think the importance of the systems of representation is understanding exactly the fact that what you do or what you see is actually what you can do or what you can see given the systems of representation that you have taught to use, right? And all the systems of representations are again constructed. And when we realize that one can start seeing differently by using different systems of representation, or by changing your point of view or your perspective, then all of these things that art has to give to you and to reveal to you become more apparent. So on a more personal level, languages have been very important for us in our personal life as well. I mean, Pier Giorgio is Italian, I am Greek. We moved to Paris and we speak English between us. So there are already four languages on our everyday life that are kind of mixed, and they kind of create a new language in some sense, which is the language that we use to communicate between us and with the rest of the world. So this was also something that interests us a lot. And I think it also gives you this possibility of at the same time being an outsider or figuring out how to do things or see things in a different way, because you are already using languages which are not the native languages, right?
And besides that, you told me that you really like to have a relationship with artists and knowing them, getting to know their context and understanding them better. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how these relationships helped them, the artists, and changed your perception as collectors, no? And during these past years.
Yes, absolutely. I think as we said earlier on, for us, acquiring a piece is the beginning of a journey, right? For us, when a new artist enters the collection, it's the beginning of a journey, and we are there for the long term. We are really doing our best to support them, collect their work and support them in the long term. So obviously for this long-term commitment to take place, it's very important to get to know them personally, right? Because for us, of course, purchasing artworks is fundamental, is important, is central, but it's not the only way to support artists. And we like to spend time with them to see how we can provide opportunities to create new connections. There are many ways in which you can support artists today. And it's much easier, of course, when you actually know them, right? So it's very, very important. And also it's very rewarding for us to meet artists. This is all about them, right? What we're all doing here is about them and about the artworks. And we find that we learn a lot from them. We exchange a lot from them. They make us better people. And it's so exciting and rewarding spending time with them. And as Jordanis was saying, this whole concept of looking at the world differently, we have really been able to do a little bit of that also thanks to the relationship and the long term that we've had with the artists that we support. It's not always easy, right? Because obviously we have, at the same time you purchase artworks and having a sort of peer-to-peer relationship, it's not always easy. And so it's easy to be trapped into sort of the collector protecting the artist or being benevolent to the artist or whatever. So these are traps which are inevitable. There's no solution to that, but we're trying to do our best and see how do we approach them. And really just being there for the artist, really accompany them, hold their hands and, you know, being there for them, with them in this journey together, in this piece of journey together. So this is really why it's important for us.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I was just thinking about the residency program in the island that you have been doing, which is focused on the relationship with people, not only with artists, but as with people in general, audiences, artists, and ethics as well. I think you mentioned, and this maybe connects as well with your careers. I think it would be nice to tell us a little bit about what you two do, you know, for a living, and then as well, what is the residency program that I was fascinated to hear when you told me.
Sure. So on my side, I'm a scientist. I work for the National Research Center in France, and I'm working on quantum computing, so more mathematics and computer science. And on the question of how that has kind of changed the way we look at art or how it takes part in it, I guess it's not so much that we are looking at works that are scientific in the content, but it's more the way we approach the collection, which is something maybe the same way that they approach a scientific question, which is that the first thing you have to do is try to understand what you're trying to do, get the knowledge that you need, try to put things together, situate them, and figure out what to do and why you're doing what you're doing somehow. So, and this goes back to also to this notion of a collector, as for us, a collector is not only someone who's very passionate about art or who's very curious about art. These are great, and I think we are both passionate and curious ourselves as well. But for us, it's also important to say that the collector is also someone that needs to do the work, that we need to understand why we're doing how we're doing, both on understanding art itself and art history and how to contextualize all this, but also, as you said, in our relation to the artists, in the relation to communities when we are trying to do a public program. And I think these are all things that get us into the questions on the residency and also on the ethics of collecting.
Yes, absolutely. And on my side, I'm an ethics professional. I've been working in this field for almost 20 years now, and also teach at the university business ethics. And this whole concept of ethics has been very important for us also, and especially in the last few years, on how we've approached both our program. You know, you mentioned Phenomenon. So Phenomenon, just for the audience, is a residency program that takes place every 2 years on Anafi, a small island in the Aegean in Greece, where we invite about 10 participants, mainly visual artists, but also poets, philosophers, anthropologists, dancers. And we spend 2 weeks together, and there's, you know, projections, there's performances, there's discussions, there's a small exhibition all across the island. And the way my job as ethics professional has influenced that has been really in relation to the island, right, and its inhabitants, and how you put yourself into a relationship which is not a tourist relationship, which is not a relationship of sort of cultural dominance, but a relation, again, a relation of peers to peers, and how the island doesn't end up being a background, sort of a postcard or a stage to all of this, but how the island and the history of the island and the inhabitants are an essential element of the program. And so, again, there's no right answer. It's just a fail and try, but just being aware of the pitfalls, being aware of the problems, and try to address them as best as one can possibly do. That's really at the heart of our sort of effort to create this program. And then very recently, we've also been working in the last few months. Actually, we've been working more concretely because we've been thinking about this. The moment we realized we were collectors, the following thing we thought of is, how do we challenge this role? And this role, which appears to be a little fixed at times. So how do we challenge that? And looking at the ethics of collecting is very important for us today. You know, the art world, actually the world, is going through a lot of changes, from the Me Too world to all the scandals that we've seen in the art world really recently. And collectors seem to be less impacted, less affected, maybe because we do hold some of the economic power in this game. And so people perhaps feel less inclined to criticize us or to attack us. Some of it has happened, perhaps not enough. But we're trying to look at what are the duties of collecting today, right? What are the duties towards the artists? What are the duties towards the artwork? How do we relate to each other as collectors? What's important to keep in mind? So we will be sort of working on this and hopefully involving more collectors over the next few months, and trying to come up perhaps with a set of principles that, you know, not pointing fingers, but rather really say, what are the values that we want to embody today when we collect, and what's important today, especially when it comes to respecting artworks and respecting artists. So yes, as you can see, our professions have had and do continue to have an impact on the way we collect.
That's super relevant. I love this project. And going back to the collection, I am actually super interested in this idea of invisibility, since it's the theme topic of this year, Artorama. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the concept and how it plays in your collection.
Yeah, it's indeed a very interesting concept, the concept of invisibility, and it's quite central both in our collection and also in our residency program in Phenomenon. I guess what we said before is the way we see art is as something that can provide us with new ways of looking at things, right? And it's exactly in this passage between something that used to be invisible and giving visibility to something like that, where we think that art can play a role, and also even a political role, in the sense that things that are visible and invisible for many different reasons. It could be just a matter of light, of like focusing the light there, or a matter of language, getting the right language to talk about something. The moment you talk about something, it starts existing. But also when it comes to histories, what is forgotten, what stays in histories, who writes the histories, and how do we make sure that minorities and the marginals do not become invisible, right? So all these questions are, I think, questions that art has many tools and strategies to look at. And I think what is interesting for us, and this is what we have been doing recently as well, is to look at art as a space where we can start talking, we can start discussing, we can start creating new ways of being together, of doing things together, of creating communities.
Yes, yes. And even in relation to Phenomenon, our our program. The concept of visibility, invisibility have been very, very central. Anafi means actually means the one that was made visible. So that's the name of the island. And it's also one of the reasons why we chose that island for our project. And, you know, this is a theme which is very dear to conceptual art, which is central in the way we collect. But it's, as Jordanis was saying, has gone much beyond. And today is also about visibility in terms of who is in the light and who is kept outside of the light. And if going back to Anafi, yes, Anafi means the one that's made visible. And the myth of the island is very interesting. The Argonauts were sailing just in front of Anafi. It was a dark night. They thought they were dying and they invoked Apollo. Apollo appeared with an arrow of light, made Anafi visible so they could be saved by this darkness. And so the whole sort of island is intrinsically linked to this concept of visibility and invisibility. And also, Anafi was an island of exiles during the 20th century, political exiles, especially communists. They were sent away by the dictatorship in Greece to this remote island. And the locals for many years didn't want to talk about it. And all traces of these several hundred people that lived there for several years were made invisible. And this is also something, together with the other histories and stories of Anafi, that we tried to investigate. And it's all about invisibility. And so again, you know, we're really happy that Arthur Ram has chosen this subject matter for this year's edition, because it's something that's very dear to us at different levels.
That's beautiful. Do you want to talk maybe a little bit about some works, specific works, for example, Daniel's Rainbow and Jung's performance that has no documentation? Only protocol. I think it would be really helpful so that the audience can imagine a little bit, see a little bit the works, you know, through your words.
Yeah, sure. As we said, there are quite a few works that deal in the collection that deal with this notion of visibility and invisibility, or with the fact that the work is not an object, it's not an art object, but something that exists or may not exist in the world. So, for example, one of the works is by the artist Florence Jung. It's a performance, and it's actually just a protocol. And the protocol says that there need to be two performers that are on opposite sides in the world, like one may be in Europe and the other somewhere in Asia, so that there are 12 hours difference between them. And they have to follow the same protocol at the same time. So they have to stay at the same chain of hotels, they have to eat the same things, they have to read the same books or think about something at the same time. So it's this kind of invisible connections between these two people that spend this day in the anti-diametrical places on Earth. And talking about the invisibility, there is no documentation for the piece. So the piece only exists within the catalogue, within the list of works of an exhibition when it is exhibited, right? And the description of the piece that says that this performance is happening. And this is the only thing that remains from this piece, apart from the fact of all the things that one can imagine while just reading the title and a small description about this work.
Yes, and the other work that you mentioned, Tiago, by Daniel Gustav Kramer, The Rainbow. It's another work which is very central, very dear in our collection. And so the way it's installed is that 7 days before the opening of the exhibition, a specific wall in the exhibition space has to be painted with the colors of the rainbow. So every day a different color. And then the day of the exhibition, just before the exhibition, the wall is painted white. So all the different layers and colors pre-existing in the rainbow, they are kind of becoming visible under this coat of white. And sometimes around the edges, you can see the traces, very minimal, very small traces of the colors, or you may not. It depends on how actually the painting has been performed. And again, it's a work that talks about invisibility, but at the same time, things are there. They're all there. They exist. And if you really want to go, you can go and look at them.
So thank you very much. It was wonderful talking to you both. Thank you very much for making your collection visible to us.
Thank you very much, Thiago.
Thank you, Thiago.
Thanks, Artorama.
Thank you, Artorama. Bye.
Artorama Podcast.